We ready?
Yeah. All right, good morning. I will call us to order for the regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting for this Tuesday, January 13th of 2015, and ask if everyone please join the board as we honor America with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
First item on today's agenda is public comment number one. This is a comment period for members of the public to address topics on this agenda. Seeing no one moving to the microphone, we'll move on to consideration of minutes, and we have the January 6th minutes.
Move approval as submitted.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion or corrections? Clinton.
Aye.
Toot.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Minutes pass. Consideration of personnel actions as listed.
Move approval.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Toot.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Personnel action pass. Consideration of claims.
Move approval.
Second.
Motion and a second for claims. Any questions or discussion? Clinton.
Aye.
Toot.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Claims pass. Consent agenda. Please add utility permit 1543.
1543. Move approval with noted changes.
Second.
Motion and a second. Clinton.
Aye.
Toot.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Consent agenda passes. Public hearing items. Second consideration of ordinance 235 amending section 1.11-2. Charlie.
Good morning,
Charlie.
Good morning.
We have nothing to update from last week. We've had no public comment at all on this one, actually. So with that, if the board does feel inclined to do so, we would recommend waiving third consideration on this. And if there's any questions, I would be happy to answer them.
No questions?
Nope. Open the public hearing.
All right, we'll open the public hearing and ask if there is anyone who would like to address our adoption procedure. Seeing no one moving to the microphone, I will close the public hearing and turn to the board.
I would move that the approval of the ordinance number 235 amending section 1.11-2 for adoption procedures for the code of ordinance and waive the third and final reading.
I'll second that.
We have a motion and a second to adopt and waive the third and final reading. Further discussion? Clinton.
Aye.
Toot.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Ordinance 235 is passed, and we have waived the third reading. Next item on today's agenda is consideration of requests for proposals for the coordinated long-range plan. Story County, from cornerstone to capstone, the comprehensive plan, or as Leanne likes to refer to it, the C2C.
Did you come up with
the acronyms? You still do that.
What?
Did you come up with that?
Yes.
It's not as good as Rufus Wig.
Oh, work on it. That's a goal. Good morning.
Morning.
I have a quick presentation I need to pull up.
Can you dim the lights here a little bit, sweetie?
What's before you this morning is the request for proposals for the coordinated long-range plan work. Just quickly, the draft RFP that is on your agenda details a scope of services that helps Story County select a consultant that will assist us in preparing and adopting a coordinated long-range plan. As has been said, it's being fondly called the C2C project. The planning horizon would go through 2036, and that is assuming it would be adopted in 2016. So it's about an 18-month planning time frame for the project from beginning to end. And again, adoption in 2016, so a 20-year plan. As the board knows, it will assist us in defining our future growth and development for Story County, physical and policy-based, incorporating several elements that are detailed in the RFP and listed on the screen. The proposed budget that we are looking at is not to exceed $70,000 for consulting fees spread over two fiscal years. The RFP does ask for a detailed budget, though, and that be practical for undertaking the project. and keep in mind the local expertise that we have with a professional planning staff and then the C2C project team that would include other county staff. And then we do also detail in the RFP that it is a potential that we would have them help us with the implementation strategies if the budget allows. And so we've asked them to detail and separately what that type of funding would require. The ultimate decision would not be based on that, however. The schedule that the draft RFP details is public hearing today to release the RFP, and then we'll release it if it's approved today. We're following a similar path that we have with other RFPs, asking for questions by January 30th, and then we'll provide responses on or before February 5th. Responses will do, the RFPs will be due on February 17th, and you'll acknowledge receipt of those on that day. We'll tentatively schedule interviews and presentations for the board, depending on the number of consultants we receive proposals from, on the following week, on the 24th of February, and then consultant selection on March 3rd, and then a couple weeks for contract selection. And this is the evaluation criteria that is laid out in the RFP. I won't go over that, but we did incorporate that into the RFP so that consultants know upon what basis we are providing recommendations and evaluating the proposals. And then staff does recommend approval of the C2C RFP or C2C project RFP and recommend that you direct us to place on our website and our bid postings and then use other means to distribute it as well. Are there any questions?
I'm not sure how I want to state this. Based on where we are now and the work that have already been done with our Long Range plan, and when we a few years ago brought in a consultant to help us with our, you know, strategic planning process, I think we identified certain futuristic things that we wanted to have, and we know that we have adopted several of those that came from that plan. What is uniquely different at this point that a outside consultant would help us, in your opinion, be able to become maybe more strategic in identifying and prioritizing where we, you know, want to place our emphasis over the next 2 or 3 years, assuming assume these are going to have to be in stages. So I just wanted you to share your thought process with me a little bit from that regard, if you wouldn't mind.
And I should say, Charlie, jump in at any time you want to. Well, as is spelled out in the RFP, too, you're right. We've done a substantial amount of work up to this point in planning that has been very successful. This builds on that. And the RFP recognizes that the consultant has to evaluate or use what we've already evaluated, what we've already done, and provide recommendations on what we can do to take it to the next step. It is more visionary and long-term than our strategic planning has been thus far. Our county development plan that was adopted in 2003 is now 12 years old, and it is solely a land use plan for the unincorporated areas of Story County. This really does take up another level and go beyond just that land use plan to a more comprehensive effort that looks at several different elements and hopefully is more cohesive and seamless and does not limit itself to the unincorporated areas.
I'd just give Wayne my perspective and ask Charlie and Leanne to correct me if I'm missing something here. So I view it, we've been moving from general to more and more specific, and this is getting us to the really specific. So we started with the CPAT report, right, which came in and took a quick look at our communities and our structure, and we moved from that to the strategic plan, which gave us some more broad-based vision. Two different groups doing those two items. Then we move to the visioning, another group helping us with the visioning, but they've all been building on each other. And to me, this is what we were trying to get to all along, but we didn't have the foundation we needed to be able to build to this coordinated long-range plan. I like the idea of a solid RFP. We end up seeing what we get from consultants, but I like having different consultants each step of the way, because then you don't get locked into one philosophy or one methodology. And like I say, I think we're to the point that we have a foundation that we can really do something special with. But I really, really like what's been presented here, and I like seeing what kind of proposals we can get. Did I miss on any of that? Is the way I'm seeing it?
The only thing I would add, I think, is with our county development plan from a land use perspective, it's been in place, again, I think, since about 2003, and we use it to guide our decision-making, in rezonings, conditional use permits and whatnot. It's a really broad-based plan, I think, that with the tier system and how it's laid out in our land use framework map, and we're hoping that this become somewhat more specific to guide us through those decisions. The Ames Urban Fringe Plan is a really good example of that. That was something we did at the staff level. You'll recall it took, 10 years? Good 10 years to get that done. We haven't done any of the other fringe plans with any of the other cities because of the amount of time it took to get that particular one done. So just getting us a better land use plan from our department's perspective is going to help us immensely in making better land use decisions in the future.
And I'm with you, but I like the idea of that being expanded beyond just the land use plan.
Exactly, and I was just, from our perspective, I was pointing that out. But, yeah, I mean, it'll deal with transportation and everything and hopefully help us guide a lot of those decisions.
Yeah, my comment was not saying that I saw negatives. It was more about just a clarification of the future of the process that we had put in place in the past and how this would build on that or enhance it, and so forth. And so I that was my purpose, is just trying to identify a little bit more of our thought process as we move through one hurdle to the next, and then how at the end of this, if approved, and we brought in a consultant to guide us through that process, what we thought our end result would be. That was the purpose of the question.
I think it's a great question, and I think it's important for us to recognize that this is a piece of everything we've been doing before. And so I think it was a really good question and one we need to talk about. Any questions before we open the public hearing? All right, with that, I will open the public hearing on consideration of requests for proposals for the coordinated long-range plan and ask if there's anybody who would like to address the board on this. Seeing no one moving to the microphone, I'll close the public hearing and I'll turn to the board for action.
Okay.
I would move approval of the request for proposal for the coordinated long-range plan for Story County.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Further discussion or questions or comments?
No, again, I just, again, Leanne and Charlie and everyone connected with this, I think this is just another tremendous example of the process that we've utilized over the past several years, looking futuristic and looking at how we can improve delivery of service to the constituents of Story County in a more cost-effective way, and helping us really begin to identify and prioritize things. I just wanted to compliment you again on the guidance that you're giving the board and giving us a structure that we can hopefully arrive at some results that'll be positive. So,
Thank you. Anything further? Toot.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Please send out the request for proposal. That leads us to additional items. Open bids for the communication equipment systems repurpose and established time frame for review. And we lost Leanne. Oh, there she is.
I believe all three of you have a copy of the...
Yeah, give before you start opening, give us a 10-second synopsis of what this is, what we've been working on, and what we're doing.
This is the essentially the repurpose, our request for proposals for the repurpose of the communications equipment system on the communications tower on this building, on the administration building. If you'll recall, last fall we did an RFP to have a new tower put up. That tower was installed in December, and so we currently have three towers now on this building. This RFP is to take the equipment from the two older towers and move it to the new tower, and then remove the two older towers.
Thank you.
With that, I am going to actually back up and explain the process a little bit more. I will let you know the bids that we did receive. from which entities we receive them. The staff members that have been reviewing this project from the inception will meet tomorrow morning to review the proposals, and we will bring it back with a recommendation on your agenda.
Who all is that?
That is Cal Pearson, Barb Steinbeck, Brian Wild, Dina McKenna, Keith Morgan, myself, and ex officio Paul has sat in.
Yeah, you've been neck deep on the whole tower thing.
Is that the same one?
That's one way to put it.
Okay.
Are there any questions?
So no decision will be made today,
today,
other than us receiving and acknowledging receipt of the bids. So, okay, good. Okay.
Okay. The first one is from Sabre Communications Corporation from Sioux City, Iowa. And I forgot my thingamajig.
I got a lot of those in my office.
Okay, let me get both these open. Cal, do you want to help me, possibly? Oh, thank you. Always trust the county engineer to have a letter opener.
I get nervous when Darren has something sharp.
Okay. There are two envelopes contained in the RFP, with envelope one states original, and that is again from Sabre Communications. Try and find the amount for you. Okay. $39,840.
$39,840.
Okay. And again, we'll be back to verify.
Now, let me ask the question again. Do they have to have a bonding situation like this one, like a lot of the bids that we have? Is there any acknowledgement of that?
We did require proof of insurance.
Proof of insurance, okay.
But we didn't.
And is there a form that's indicating that that's there?
Well, I think with these guys, it's probably where we've got it on the tower.
Yeah.
Yeah, no bid bond on these. No.
That's
on
what
these
I'm asking.
Yeah, no bid bond on these.
Okay, yep. Okay. Okay. No.
Good. Keep these together. The next one is from Electronic Engineering Company. This one states cost. It has three boxes. It says our first bid response is pricing to complete the job from what is listed on page 3 under capabilities. Electronic Engineering Company submits a bid of $24,953.24953. Then the next box says our second bid response is pricing to complete the job with the items that were omitted from your list but need to be addressed. Electronic Engineering Company submits a bid of $12,398.12398. Our third bid response, which is Exhibit 4, is for a turnkey solution, replacing all the antennas with new ones, new coax, new connectors, and a new PTP microwave solution. Electronic Engineering Company is submitting a turnkey bid of $55,082.60, 55082.60. And the last envelope we have is from Electronic Engineering. Is it the same proposal?
Yeah. have he required us to have two packets. One has the itemized out, the other one has the support. Okay.
So we have one proposal from Electronic Engineering. They put it in two envelopes.
Okay.
So with that, if there are any questions, all the board needs to do today is acknowledge receipt of the two proposals, and I will be back in front of you next Tuesday.
Okay. I would move that we acknowledge receipt of the bid proposal submitted.
Motion and a second. Clinton?
Aye.
Toot?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Bids are acknowledged. Please bring us back an apples to apples
right.
comparison.
And that's what I was going to ask you.
We will do our very best.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Great. Okay. Thank you.
No agency reports. Departmental report. Engineer quarterly report. Darren. Darren, how you doing today?
Good. It's a ways in. You can wait.
Okay.
Everybody's probably seen it already anyway.
Yeah, I can see it. Mm-hmm.
Okay, I put this together about a week ago, and at that time I said we're seeing a lot of cost savings from the mild winter. That's changed a little bit, but
you jinxed us,
yeah.
Didn't you?
We're still below average, so we're saving some money there on overtime. We're at about 20% of our budget on overtime, using a little bit less salt, and the biggest cost savings in our fuel, one, in the amount we're using, and two, in the price. Our budget for fuel each year is about $450,000. It's mostly diesel fuel, and that hasn't come down quite as much as gasoline, but I'd expect to see somewhere in $100,000 savings on just fuel budget this year.
Mm-hmm.
We did have to contend with the winds this week for 2-3 days straight. We're able to get through everything once in a day on our motor grader, so the rural residents need to know on the gravel roads, when we get winds that high, they'll see us once at least, and stuff could drift right back in within an hour. So we've been there, but when the winds go down, we're going to get back out quickly and push everything back. And had very few complaints, so our operators did a really good job with the 3 days they were.
Do the new road graders improve our ability to get all the way through a district?
Yeah, speed. They have more power. They have the front wheel assist. You'll see it the most when we have the real heavy snows and the deep drifting. It takes a
while. Let's hope that's next year that we deal with some of that.
If we have that, we'll definitely see an improvement there. We'll push through those big drifts a lot more quickly.
But getting all the way through a district in one day is a really good thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yep. Okay.
We did have a little bit of an issue. You recall the snow was so fluffy, it was clogging the air filters and the motor graders. They'd get 2 or 3 hours in, and everything's so computerized now. We had one at the end of the day actually shut it down, and Cat knows the problems before we do because it's all GPS, and they track from their office in Des Moines. So they were on their way before it even shut down. So
cool.
They came up and fixed it right away. But we're trying to come up with a solution. We have those really fluffy snows, something to put around the air intake to block it a little bit more. But an issue we're working on, but overall it went pretty well. In the downtime this winter, we're catching up on a lot of our brush clearing out these flood debris remnants. This is Riverside Road. And the major one, this is that end of Ken Merrill at our historic bridge that's closed, but we have a huge, I don't have a picture of up against the pier. It's got a huge pile of debris. We got to get out of there because these very large cottonwoods, like I say, that root ball is 10, 12 foot high. We've been waiting for the water to freeze. We can't get out there. It's too far of a reach for anything we have. So we're waiting for the water to freeze. We can get out there with at least chainsaws and maybe some equipment and start cutting that up so it could at least wash downstream. Because if we don't, it's pushing all the water to the sides now and cause major erosion on the adjacent farm field. So this is a major project we're going to have this winter.
Water should be frozen now, shouldn't it?
I would think so. The river's still moving, so sometimes that takes a little longer. But touch base quick on our work order system. We put this into effect January 1st last year through our service bureau. It's worked really well. These are all the work orders we had for the year of 2014, calendar year. We usually average 300 to 400. These are calls that come in requesting work to be done, and they're all categorized by color. This is what's left from 2014 that didn't get completed. Most of them are that green color, which are the ditch cleanings, which we never seem to catch up on, and it's typical to have a ongoing list of those. The light blue ones are IRVM seedings yet to be done, and common stuff. But this, what this system does for us more than ever, it helps us make sure we don't forget anything. It stays in the system where before we had on cards that could get lost. If we lose a card, we lose what the work order was.
So I would assume if we see a red one on there, it's one that you need to get to sooner rather than later?
We do have a high priority flag on when they enter it. So another thing we're working on through the Service Bureau is attaching this to the one-call system, now a one-call system. So when we enter a work order, it automatically sends information to one call and gets approvals back through this work order system. And so far, that one call has been open to working with us. And if that gets done, this can be a really useful tool.
Looks like it already is really useful.
It is. It's a great tool.
And we'll be enhanced if we can get the one call.
It's in-house. We can customize it however we need. Moving on to construction. The last project of calendar year 14 was the North Dakota Bridge replacement. That got completed on November 8th and opened back to traffic.
Really looks good, by the way.
Yeah,
really did a nice job.
Picture of it here on a wet day, but all you can see is the two head walls out here. It used to be a narrow bridge and right on a curve, so really improved safety and pretty much a maintenance-free structure there for a long time. Moving to the 2015 year local construction, number one is the Berry Patch Bridge, estimated $400,000. That was let a couple weeks ago through the DOT, came in at $397,000, so real close to our estimate. That's a picture of that bridge. And location is straight south of Nevada. If you're familiar with the Berry Patch, is right here. Have been in contact with them last year, warning them this was coming, and they start their business heavily already in May with the rhubarb, so they're concerned about traffic being cut off. We have a pre-construction meeting this Friday already with the contractor, and they're talking about starting in a week or two, so that's a good thing. We were hoping that would happen so we could get this thing mostly completed. You can't pour a bridge deck till April, May time frame, but then it doesn't take long to finish it up after that. So right now it looks like we'll get this thing done before they get too much business traffic out there. And it is a pretty good detour to get around to it, and it's difficult to get to. But I'll be informing them of this because this just came out this week on how soon that could start. While I have this slide up too, I'll show you. We do have another project being let through the DOT. It's farm to market, so it wasn't on that list. It's this culvert right here on S27 pavement. That'll take place this summer. It'll be about a month or month to 2 month project. The one concerning thing is a long pavement all the way down to Maxwell that has no crossroads of pavement. So we're going to try to put some signs in Maxwell warning traffic not to come up here, because once they get up here, then they're going to have to take the gravel roads. But we're already anticipating having to put some dust control down on at least these two stretches, because there's a lot of houses on here, and they're going to see a lot of additional traffic for that month to 2 month period while we put that. It's a precast box culvert, so it should go fairly quickly, but they have to put down new concrete, and that takes time to cure out and everything. But just a heads up that that will happen this year also, but it's farm to market funding, not local funding. 550th culvert replacement, that's the one we let last spring, and it came in high. Had only one bidder as a last-minute bidder, and we felt it came in quite high, so we decided to re-let that. We're setting that letting for February 10th. We're going to let a little sooner this year, try to get some better prices. If we don't, we might have to kick some more money into that 150, but we already completed this 140th Street this fall, and that came in at 71, so we have a little bit of additional money already in there. We could add to it for that. And then the last project is Hickory Grove Bridge, which is also let in February. Hope to get some good prices on that, but construction prices are rising, so we're concerned about that. We'll see how that comes in.
Hopefully fuel prices are going to help us with some of that right now, aren't they?
Yeah, that would be good. Move on to bridge inspections. It's a little of a dark picture, but you kind of see the point on the other side here. That's a steel beam. This is West 190th, just a little bit west of the Prairie Moon Winery out there. So far, this is really the only issue they found. We knew this was there. It's already been load posted, but what they're having us do now is we installed these markers 3 feet in from each side just to make sure nobody drives. People weren't driving out there anyway because it slopes off, but we wanted to make sure. So that was the one major finding so far from the bridge inspections.
That's the smaller of the two. That's the one that we've got to replace regardless of what we do with 190.
Yeah, correct.
Okay.
It's already on the paved stretch here, or the seal coated. Right now, it's not in our 2016 because we have so much in there already. This is going to be a fairly expensive project for our local budget. It's going to be a $300,000 to $400,000 project. So it's going to be in 17. That might be all we have for construction in 17 for our local budget. But this will get us by till then. As you get further in, the beams get better. What happens is the salt comes down and hits these outside beams much worse. Mm-hmm. And there was one other finding. It was on 580th, just north of Holibs on the gravel road. There's a small wood bridge. The post, it wasn't posted before, and it lowered the posting just a little bit. But so far, that's the only two findings. And they've gotten through most of the county before the snow hit, which is good because you can see things a lot better under the bridges before we get drifting snow. Just wanted to make you aware, a contract came through a month or two ago about renting the DOT snooper. This is what a snooper is. There was a new change to the federal regulations where these steel, this is not a county, Story County bridge, but it gives you an idea, these steel truss type bridges. New rule is you have to actually get under there and those cross members underneath steel cross members, you have to touch those with your hand to visually inspect them. So that's why you now need a snooper. That started 2 years ago. And our consultant had lined up a snooper for that through the DOT. We did it this time, but what happened is the DOT changed their trucks. They're heavier. It has to be a heavy truck to support this large cantilever out there. So they brought heavier trucks, and all the bridges that they needed to get on could not support that heavy truck. So
there's government of its finest right there. Wow.
At this point, they're going to try their best to get up with ladders under all of our. We have a handful of bridges that have to be done this way, and try to do it by ladders, and that's the plan at this point. But
oof,
that plan fell through with the snoopers.
Well, Darren, you know, you guys, engineers and DOT, why couldn't they have a type of a platform built with cables coming down that could be latched on there that, you know, individuals could be, you know, like a pulley type thing where you could come up to that level.
You have to get out under the bridge, too, is the problem. You have to be in the middle.
So there's nothing under there that could be latched onto or hooked onto that allow you to do that?
So far, this is the best solution I've seen. It usually works, but
right,
when it's a load-posted bridge already, it makes it more difficult.
I think we probably, yeah, okay. It just seems like that there ought to be another
on that, Wayne.
Another something else other than just that.
That's something every county's dealing with because it is a new change, and we're struggling with it like everybody else. But let's see. One update, Dion. We put some more information in our GIS system for our bridges. These are all our bridges, and they're now color-coded according to what type of bridge they are. The brown ones, it's hard to see brown, but this next slide highlights the wood bridges. We have 132 wood bridges, which are the ones we have the difficulty with. They're mostly the load-posted ones, and they deteriorate more quickly. I overlaid that with bridges that have had major repairs within the past 20 years. You can see most of those are the wood bridges. There's a few here that were concrete bridges that had some repairs, but you see the vast majority of our where we're investing our bridge repair money is in those wood bridges. The reason I'm kind of bringing this up is we're kind of hitting that time period where we've repaired a lot of those easy single-span wood bridges with these more expensive repairs. A lot of these that are left are multiple-span. It's really expensive to bring a crane in and dismantle those bridges, and you can spend $40,000 to $60,000 easy just repairing that bridge. And they're getting to be 50 to 70 years old. The deck, the back wall, all this wood's wore out to the point where you don't want to be investing a lot of money in these bridges. So we're kind of switching to more of the temporary, easier fixes where you do the one pile repair. When we do that with our own crews, so it doesn't cost us a lot of money in our local budget other than our labor, you'll see some concrete stuff. So you won't see a lot of money being put into our bridge repair, which is kind of counterintuitive, thinking we need a lot of bridge money, but yet.
Well, we need more in bridge replacement and less in bridge repair. Now, do most of these wood bridges, would they be replaced with a culvert? I mean, is that where it's going?
We try to and we can, but they got to be small enough structures. If multiple span one, definitely not. The culvert, the max culvert size is 36 foot long. That's a triple, and that even those are fairly expensive. But where we can get a single box precast, we try to get those in now.
And what does that cost us to do it? To do a single box, just real general number, what was that cost?
That last one we did up by Zeering was that one for 80, but we got it done for 71.
For 71?
Yeah.
And you're saying some of these you spent 40 or 50 repairing them?
Yeah, oh yeah.
So it just seems to me that anytime we can at this point, we need to be looking at spending the money for the replacement, because then it's going to save us money down the road, money you're not having to dump in to repair them.
Yep, that's the point I was trying to get across. Yep. We're kind of changing our philosophy with the aging wood bridges. Just stats on the other ones. We have 82 concrete bridges, 14 of those trusses that take the extra inspection. Box culverts over 20 foot, because the federal government only considers a bridge if it's only over 20 foot. So box culverts over 20, we have 45 of those. But I wanted to show you, if we add in box culverts under 20 feet,
yep,
these are concrete boxes, that's another 495 of those we have. And then you throw in metal pipes. We're not through with inventory. We do that as we have time. We've inventoried the whole north half a few years ago, but so we're up to 1,300 pipes, but we haven't inventoried the far south end yet. So just give you an idea how many structures, even the smaller size, we have out there.
Absolutely. But for a normal, we put a metal pipe in, so it's a smaller, smaller flow, smaller diameter. We don't really have to deal with that on a normal basis very often, right?
We're out there constantly replacing metal pipes, but they're small enough. We can get them in a day. It's not a real big deal.
Okay.
Yeah. So but we have a pretty good stockpile of metal pipe. That's something we do in the summer a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I updated the age of our bridges, and these are those ones in the middle that are almost exclusively wood. That time frame from 40 years to 70-year-old bridges, it was just the time period when they built wood bridges and had cheap labor to build something like that. We're gaining a little ground here. 0 to 10-year-old bridges are seeing a little bit of a spike there, but we still got these really old ones out that are the real concern for us.
Mm-hmm.
Just in calendar year 14 and going into 15, we replaced seven or the 14 ones are the purple ones. We placed seven, and then we have six more planned for here in the spring. So within about a year and a half, we're going to replace 13 bridges. So we're making some ground. I wanted to point out, we have four historic bridges in the county that are on the historic register. Three of those are Luton Arch bridges. That's this long concrete arch. Two of them are in pretty good shape. One of them is not. That's that one down by Maxwell. You see in the background back here. We replaced the one a few years back around the corner. About 15 years ago, we tried to work with the State Historical Society and put together a study so we could eliminate this bridge. We ran into a bunch of roadblocks at that time. But right now, Marshall County has one of these that really needs to be replaced. So they're exploring that process again, and I think it's a little bit more defined process now. So they may approach us with combining with maybe one other county, so three counties combined to do a report that documents these bridges so they can be removed at some point. So I may be bringing that to the board. I think it'd be well worth our time and money to do that. Moving on to the fuel tax increase discussion. This could happen this year. Been saying that for about 10 years now.
Got more momentum right now than it's had, though.
People are saying the stars are aligning, but I'm optimistic. There's many proposed options. I prefer the indexed increase option, and I'll get to what that is here in a little bit. But the Legislative Service Agency put together a report here. I wanted to hit a couple slides that I thought were pretty informative. What this green here is, that's the Time 21. When that was passed, that was some additional registration fees that bumped things up for us. So this is your fuel tax. These are registration fees. And these are new car registration fees, and this is the additional. You may look at that and say, well, what's the problem? We're continuing to increase our funding over the years. The problem is this. The prices for construction are just going out of control. The black line is the average construction price increase over time. 2004 through 6 really started to go up, and these are the Steel and excavation went out of control. Steel was due to China, I believe, and the excavation was probably the fuel prices. Asphalt really went up with the fuel price increase, too. But the costs are going up. So when you compare that, that line and compare it to inflation over time in 1986 dollars, this bottom line is when you compare it to the DOT construction index, you can see we're losing ground. And the same if just the regular CPI numbers is the red one here. But we're losing ground due to construction costs, and we're losing ground because there's less fuel being purchased. Most people don't realize it, but in about 2004, I believe it was, Iowa stopped the increase in vehicle miles traveled. We've plateaued. The country plateaued a little few years later, and they're in a downturn. So people are traveling less miles. And also the fuel, the CAFE standards for fuel, that's coming into effect. We're going to get better gas mileage. That's going to lead to less fuel being bought, which is a good thing, but it hurts the money coming in to fix the roads. This puts all the tax options in the chart, and the one I recommended there was the indexed increase. That's this one right here where you have a 10-cent increase over 3 years. And then it's adjusted to inflation also from there on out, so it continues to grow. If you just did the straight 10-cent tax increase, that's this one, and then over time, that's not going to keep up with the construction cost index, so it's going to, we'll be right back the same place in 10 years again. And there's talk of just a straight sales tax. That's this one down here, the proposed amount for a sales tax. Current law is right here. Decreasing over time because it's not keeping pace with the construction index. So the fuel tax is by far my recommendation to increase that and then adjust it for inflation after that. The governor's recently come out with a recommendation for the 1 cent local option sales tax per county. I don't see that gain a lot of ground, one, because every county is going to have to approve that in a referendum, so you're going to have some counties that may approve it, some don't. I think we need a statewide solution. And the good part about that solution would be that money would come directly to the county. But there's no real system in place right now to collect that money at the pumps for that 1 cent, so it takes some investment there, and it generates a lot less money, too. So I hope we don't end up with that solution, but that's one the governor's proposed so far.
I'm hearing traction for the combination.
Yeah.
I mean, so that's the purple line you got up there, right? Is the combination where there's a fee to wholesale, the wholesale portion, and there's also not a 10 cent, but a portion of the new gas tax.
Okay. Yeah. I'm not sure that one's put on here, but that's one of the options in the report, too. Yeah. I know which one you're talking about. So, yeah, there's some momentum on that one. I'm sure you've all seen the ads on TV. This is from the Better Good Roads Association.
Iowa drive on over 5,000 structurally deficient bridges every day. These are the roads and bridges your school children cross every day. We never think of the imminent danger we put our children in until this happens.
We have a bridge collapse with a school bus full of children, calling all units to respond. We can't afford to wait.
Pretty subtle.
like a sledgehammer, Tuttle.
Yeah, that kind of relied on the shock factor there. But
who is the Iowa Good Roads Association?
The county engineers are involved with that. Okay. We weren't consulted on these, of course, but that's not really the style of county engineers to go that direction. But they explained to us that stemmed from us them going to legislators enough and them saying, yes, we agree there needs to be more funding, but that's not what the public wants.
Right.
So it's going to – they've heard enough where it's going to take a bridge, a school bus to go through a bridge to get something done. So they took that and ran with it. Moving on to the pipelines. I stated before, Story County had 92 miles of pipeline in the county. We just gained 12 more this past year with the Alliant pipeline going from about Ames up through Story City area. That inspection went fairly well, not a lot of complaints. I think the contractor did a good job. This is how a typical tile crossing gets repaired. The trench to put the pipeline in is directly under this white area, which is these flat sandbags they put in. From the pipe from the pipeline up, they stack those sandbags that prevents future settlement. And then they put this CMP pipe on top of that for more support and then slide the tile through that. So those seem to work pretty well. And we have reports of all those tile repairs that they estimated somewhere between 400 and 500 tile repairs were done on that 12-mile stretch. We have GPS coordinates. All this data is in our office if a farmer has an issue they think come up. But we pass that complaint on to Alliant because they're the ones that need to fix the issue. But we can tell them exactly where the problem is and supply that information so landowners can contact us first. We have the proposed pipeline coming, Dakota Access. We've been talking to some consultants preliminarily here to discuss services for this because this is going to be a much more involved inspection process. We got by with one inspector for this pipeline, Alliant. This one, ISG Group that does our drainage district inspection lately or work lately, they opened up a new office in Des Moines, the east side of Des Moines there. A really nice office. Went and visited them last week with Boone County and Jasper County. They discussed what they could provide for us. And the issue is these consulting firms really need to beef up their manpower. Their estimate maybe 15 new employees to take care of this. And they're trying to get as many counties together as can so we have some similarity in the inspection throughout counties. So that's one option. Clap Saddle Garber inspected our stretch for us the second half. They did a good job, so that's another option. But this ISG group also has been hired directly by the pipeline to go out and look at some of the bigger drainage district tiles and stuff and actually go out in the field and locate them, dig down, see how deep they are. And they're talking about actually just boring underneath those, designing their pipeline low enough so they don't even have to disturb the...
Treat it more like a body of water rather than a...
Right.
Or our roads. They're boring under all of our roads, too, so very little impact there. So they're already working with the pipeline on that, and I told them they had permission. We don't really need to give them permission to do that in the county other than getting permission from the landowners to go out there. But that's where that stands. I don't know how comfortable the board will be on... coming up to some agreement with a consultant before the pipeline is an approved utility. I can understand how you wouldn't want to, but then at the same time, these consulting firms need to know how many counties are going to be doing so they can get the manpower in place. So if the board's comfortable coming up with a temporary contract saying if the pipeline goes.
Yeah, I would think there should be a way to put together a tentative some kind of tentative agreement that says if this pipeline goes, we need to have our ducks in a row for how we're going to inspect the work and then see what we get.
Sure. I mean, we wouldn't want to sit here and sit on our hands hoping that it's not going to happen and then all of a sudden, bang, it's approved. And
sure.
Yep.
Okay. Well, at some point, I don't know if we'll have them come up, give a presentation or what, but that's where we stand now, and I'd prefer doing it with a group of a few counties anyway that
right.
Get a little bit more uniformity. couple of drainage district issues bring you up speed on. This is Boone's story number one and number three work Steve Coltenhauser's doing. He originally wanted to do that open ditch that the district approved, but then he changed it to a tile, so he's not doing the open ditch. This is the connection he's doing for that new 20-inch tile that he's outletting over into the open ditch.
And that's the way we'd asked him to do it, correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
This is in the Boone County side, so Boone County actually went out and inspected this going in to make sure it was done properly. And also, the other issue with the Boone Story 3 is Steve Coltenhauser cleaned out those ditches without district permissions, so we have the spoil piles there. Boone County commented that he may be interested in having district involvement with spreading those piles out, which means cost to the district. Probably a little hesitant on doing that because that project didn't have any district involvement. And I suppose the only people that have a complaint would be the landowner that gave Steve to do the cleaning in the first place. So I think they should just work with Steve to get it resolved. But we'll see where that heads.
That would be the primary and the best option.
And the other Boone story, this is number one up first. This is one we actually had a petition sent in to clean this short stretch of ditch. Steve supplied the excavator and we supplied the operator that we had available. It's not something we plan on doing on a regular basis, but we happen to have an operator available at the time. You can see the spoils. They're going to have to be addressed in the spring. We don't have a dozer or anything, so I'm not sure how we're going to do that yet. I'm going to talk to the IRVM and see if their tractor can get through there and disc it up or something to get that smoothed out, and then they're going to have to plan it too. So there'll be a little bit more additional cost, but that cleaning was completed. And then on another district, this is DD 20 in Richland Township. Two of my least favorite topics are drainage districts and railroads. When you combine them, it's a nightmare. That's what we've got here. This is the railroad. There's a 22-inch tile that comes through here. It is blocked and collapsing under the railroad. It's kind of bad timing because we had a recent lawsuit that a lot of counties helped fund against the railroad to try to determine who's responsible for those tile repairs under the railroad. Unfortunately, the end result of that lawsuit didn't answer our question. I'll get to that in a second. But so now there's a little bit more hard feelings between districts and the railroad. We met with the railroad out here. Yes, they said, yeah, there's a problem. They hinted they may help, but then I sent a letter to the railroad looking for official approval on behalf of the District 20. And the response is Union Pacific does not intend to complete this repair or fund the district's completion of the repair. So at this point, they will not participate in any of the cost. It says they have been working with the Iowa Drainage District Association to develop a uniform access terms of conditions to be used in this situation. That's an ongoing discussion. I don't know how quickly it'll be resolved. The lawsuit, to give you an idea what that was, this is what the railroad actually went in and repaired a tile and then sent the bill to the district. So the railroad actually sued the county to get that money for the repair. But because the court decided the railroad did not have the ability to sue the district for reimbursement of the costs because they didn't get approval from the district ahead of time, it ended up where this didn't answer our question in the end. It said the county did not have to pay the railroad, but it didn't say who would be responsible for something like this in the future.
Is the railroad ground not part of the drainage district?
It is, but
So we as secondary roads.
So is it like an easement, though?
Well, but we have roads where we have our easements for roads, but that makes us part of that drainage district, right? Any
correct.
Part of that that's in the drainage district, we pay our portion on that. And I understand I'm opening a can of worms here, but why aren't railroads treated the same? Hey, great, so they don't worry about the repairs, they don't complete them, but they should be charged for their portion of the drainage.
Correct. You've got that component, and then you've got the component of just getting access to railroad property. It's difficult. They charge you a considerable amount for insurance, and then they charge you for flaggers, like $750 a day. It's considerable cost just to enter their right-of-way. Right now, the Drainage District Association's opinion after this lawsuit is we can go in there and do whatever we want without asking. So that's why there's a bit of hard feelings right now between the railroad and the drainage districts. There's a bit of a fight there. They're saying, no, you can't step on our property. So there's that battle.
It stops being a drainage district if we can't, if we don't have the ability. So we're bound by law to maintain those things to original specifications. The second we can't get on a piece of property, any piece of property, to do the repairs, we can't fulfill our duty in the law. My contention would be, great, railroad, you're not part of it. We'll go in and fix it. We'll charge the drainage district. But then I go one step further and I say, oh, railroad, by the way, your ground that's in here should be part of this district as well. And I'm sure I'm barking up a
tree. It is.
It is. So they do get charged their portion.
Yeah, but it probably should be higher.
Absolutely. Well, let's go in and reclassify. Make sure when we reclassify, it gets higher.
Maybe able to do that. But the next step for this district is going to be we're going to have to hold a hearing, decide, probably hire a consultant to do it. It's going to be well over $25,000. They're going to have to bore a 22-inch tile. And this district has more issues. The tile curves back, and it's getting real close to the railroad here, and it keeps eroding even the railroad bed, and they just keep dumping material, and the tile's all exposed. I think the district would like to relocate that tile away from the railroad a little bit, too. So we're getting into some considerable costs here, so I think a hearing's probably necessary to discuss. We want to hire the consultant to do the design, how the district would like to handle this. Say, do you want to sue the railroad? That's a battle most people don't take on because they know it'll cost more than the repair. But how to address this?
We have a county attorney who likes to do what's right, though. So when it comes down, I don't think he'd be afraid of the railroad.
Okay. So I guess I'll talk with Scott Wall and see if we can at least have a hearing.
That's what I would suggest, is that we move toward having a hearing.
Okay. Just real quick, the DOT did an uncontrolled intersection report at the direction of the legislature last year. This is the results of that. Each dot is an uncontrolled intersection. Story County is the yellow outline. I couldn't zoom out any further than that or I'd lose the dots, but it gives you a feel for how many uncontrolled intersections are around us. You get down into Polk, they kind of disappear. They've got some. But the results of that report is there's 22,000 uncontrolled intersections in Iowa counties. Story County has 325 of these. I'm sure you get calls from time to time on rural, sure, gravel road intersections.
I pass them on to you.
That's fine. But I don't know what the legislature is going to do with it this year, but this is the data they're going to be getting.
Is that considered crossing, road crossings? Is
no
that
stop
that?
Sign.
Stop, no stop sign.
No,
yeah.
No.
So it's mainly gravel road intersection.
Stop signs we'll have to buy.
Stop signs and then the stop ahead signs. So you got four signs.
Yep.
So it'd be fairly costly to do them all, but and there's been various studies in the past where there really isn't a benefit to doing it. And what it leads to, one, is people ignoring the stop signs when the crops are down and there's no reason to stop. You can see a mile each way. And two, if you have a stop sign everywhere, everybody assumes if there's a stop sign, I need to stop. If there's not, I can ignore it. So we have a lot of them stolen in the rural areas. So if there's not a sign there, people just blindly go through it without being cautious, and that can lead to more accidents,
sure,
is what has been found. So we'll see what comes of that this year in the legislature. Update on the DOT's interstate project south of Ames. This is the Skunk River. They're going to be replacing these two bridges and widening them. About a 2.5-mile project. They're going to add an additional third lane on each side. So six lane. I don't think they're going to open it to six right away, but they'll have it there for future use.
Yep.
Zooming in a little bit, how it affects the county. When we have a bridge over the interstate, this is a county gravel road. Even though it's got a designation of E57, it's still a gravel road. When a bridge goes over the interstate, the DOT owns the bridge, but we own the approaches up to it. They're going to totally remove that existing bridge over the interstate and widen it on this side because there is no culvert here now. They're putting an extremely large box culvert under the interstate, so I assume they'll build one at a time and have traffic head-to-head. So this water is going to come underneath here and then have to be a wide enough bridge to get under the bridge and go down to the Skunk River. So that's the reason for replacing this bridge. to get a lot of this water down through and out, because I think they're raising the grade, so they feel like they're backing up more water, so they have to get rid of it. This may help our problem with, this is Jerry Ryerson's home here, and we have that curve in the gravel road. That's where the water goes over. Every time the skunk floods, it just washes out that road completely. I'm hoping this alleviates some of that pressure and sends it down here instead of over our gravel road.
And tell me again, what is there now? What goes under the interstate there now?
There is nothing here now.
Nothing there. So the water gets down in there, and it's just got to continue to flow along the west side of the interstate.
I'm not sure what it really does. It has to get through this bridge, but I think it's kind of high under the bridge, so I think that it's kind of a roadblock. But that's what's planned. I think it's all going to happen in 2016 and 2017, but we'll have a road closure for quite a long period of time right here, and it's fairly long detour when you don't have this 265th open, so that's something the residents are going to have to deal with for quite a while.
So, Darren, I want to talk to DOT, and I'm sure they're so far down the road they're not going to talk about this, but if County Conservation was ever to put a trail along the Skunk River, either side of the Skunk River, we would sure need to cross the interstate right there, and I want to talk about building that to specifications, even if the county's got to have some skin in the game, so that we could at some point down the road put a trail there and
cross under here, you mean?
That's my first thought.
That's about the only thing you probably do. But
that's where I think you should cross, but if you don't do that, then I'm going to want to talk about going back north and crossing where the bridge crosses the interstate, because if you're going to have a trail system that flows as much along the Skunk River as possible, you got to cross 35 somewhere.
Yep.
So I'm not sure how to have that conversation, when or with whom.
It probably needs to happen fairly soon if they're putting these design plans together, so I will contact.
And I and Mike Cox figure out who to talk to, and let's go talk to them.
Okay, we'll do that. That just reminded me of something along the interstate. I failed to mention with the pipeline discussion. I think you guys are aware that there is a pumping station proposed. That's the only one in Iowa that will be right along the interstate there where it crosses, where the pipeline's proposed.
Tell me where it crosses. So this pipeline, if approved, runs north of Cambridge?
You know where Dream Lake is?
Yeah.
It'd be just north of Dream Lake. There's a couple dead-end stubs where the interstate went through it, cut off our gravel roads.
Okay.
They're looking right along. I'm not exactly sure which side of the interstate, but right there.
And that's where the pumping station would be. Okay.
And talking with Charlie, that's all regulated by the utilities board too, so we don't have a lot of say when we're how that gets built and zoning requirements for it. So,
but that's going to be south of here. This thing stays south of the Skunk River until it gets out of.
Be south of here.
Crosses the Skunk River down near Cambridge.
Correct. Yep.
Right. Okay.
Yep. Real quick update on staff changes. We had a retirement truck driver, and that position was filled with Justin Braylon. He's been in for a few months now, and he's got some winter experience now, so he's been doing a good job. He started November 17th. And our FY16 budget submittal was submitted, and we have our budget session Thursday. I just wanted to point out our budget appears to be increased by quite a bit, but that's just because we have a lot of reimbursable items, more than $1 million, where we got to spend the money and then get it back in the same year, federal bridge funds in particular. So it appears to be much higher, but we did not increase our operational expenses, but I think we'd need to, so we'll have that discussion in our budget meeting.
And the other one we got to have in the budget meeting, and you and I have talked about this, is we got to talk about the outbuildings. That are in our CIP, not in the budget at this point.
Not in our budget, yeah. Right. Correct. And last but not least, touch base on having some issues with traffic control out here by the E-Free Church on G.W. Carver. But what is going on out here? At this point, this is the parking they have for the full build-out. I don't believe they have this or a lot of this parking in place yet. But a lot of this is all existing phase one that's already in.
And this is north out by Ames Country Club and Cameron School Road. Yep.
Yeah. This driveway here goes right, this is Ames Country Club Drive, straight across from it. So that's one of the issues. We understand they're using the country club as additional parking. We're getting complaints from residents that they're hiring a traffic control company to come out and stop traffic on GW Carver during church service. And one even said he was the only car in sight, and the person that parked over here, the lots were empty, so they assume it must have been a worker that they told to start parking over here. So she was the only one crossing the road, and somebody came out and stopped them going 55 miles down the road so that one person could cross the road. And they, I can understand why they might have been a little upset. So those are the calls I'm getting. And we did not approve any traffic control out here. That's something that would have to be approved by our office to make sure they were covered liability-wise and have the proper signage out there if they were to do that. But the church was supposed to have enough parking on site to accommodate what they have out here. And that they just started having the church services out there, I believe, so that's creating some additional traffic. But they have three exits right now. And I think the flagging is for two purposes. One, to get pedestrians across to here, and two, when services out, traffic getting out on GW Carver and turning, they're stopping GW Carver traffic so they can have a flow of traffic coming out. In my opinion, that's somewhat dangerous on a 55 mile an hour highway. In town, it would be a little bit more understandable, slower speeds, but cars going 55 need plenty of advance warning to get slowed down and stopped. I could see three things happening. One, we give them temporary approval by permit process to do some flagging out there. I have some concerns with that. We could have them contact law enforcement directly if they think it's that necessary, and law enforcement could come out and do the traffic control for them at a cost. Or we could simply say, no, you need to supply parking on your site, and that doesn't really address the question of the traffic coming out after services. They apparently feel like they need to stop traffic to get traffic out. I would recommend to them to have people leery of pulling out on a 55 to use this exit, because we have a stop condition on this, so traffic's going much slower on Cameron School Road, and that access is in already.
My question is, there is a southern exit to Cameron School Road?
Yeah, this is in there to Cameron School Road.
Huh.
So there's three exits, one, two, and three.
See, now I've never seen any cars basically utilizing that. You know, and the reason I say that is this Sunday, so I go to the church, okay, and this Sunday there was no one out there. There was no vehicles. And I was curious that after this complaint, whether or not they were told not to do anything until further notice, or they just chose not to have anyone. I've right directly across from the country club entrance. My question off always is I don't see that much traffic from north south from Gilbert along that road that would propose.
Well, I think it'd be pretty low on Sundays,
you yeah,
where you'd have time to judge to get out of the parking lot.
And so the other question was, is like whenever United Way used that for their kickoff, then they had the sheriff's department out there being the traffic controller. And that's kind of a one-time type of thing. So I'm just a little, I was a little curious, one, that they did this without contacting us to find out if
I did recommend that they put that practice on hold until I had a chance to discuss with the board. So they did stop that practice.
Okay, so that would be there.
Okay, so for Wayne, I think you're absolutely right on the money. But from my perspective, first of all, they've got to file a permit with us. I mean, they got to request a permit to do this. Absolutely. And once we get the permit, then Darren, we move into your three options of. I think you said we could just grant the permit. We could grant the permit as long as they contacted law enforcement and had law enforcement out there to provide whatever traffic control they needed, or we could deny the permit. Now, I think, at least from my perspective, on a short-term basis, being a good neighbor, recognizing that they're in the middle of construction stuff out there, I would be really hesitant to move all the way to just saying, no, sorry, you're out of luck, you can't do anything. But we've got to have the permit filed first, and then we've got to see if it rises to the level of having law. I would be most inclined to have law enforcement out there at their cost.
Sure.
If they feel like that's something that's necessary.
Well, when they get done with everything, theoretically they're going to have more cars on the property anyway. So it's from their standpoint, it's going to be a continuing problem to get people out of the parking lots on Sunday after service.
Yeah.
So that, I mean, just, you know, obviously we don't want people walking across, you know, from the country club for overflow, but once, yeah. You know, once they're past that point and they can park everybody on their property,
they're still going to want to get them out.
Still going to want to get them out, and then you're right back to where the Cornerstone Church was out here on Highway 30.
My other question, is how did we treat that? Because particularly you're talking about crossing traffic coming into there if you're going eastbound from west to east.
DOT has been out there, what, at least three times and lengthened that turning lane.
Yeah.
For the traffic that's coming from Ames to go to the Cornerstone
right.
Church. And I don't know that that's going to be.
And the other question that would be, at their cost, what would it take where it's not in the right of way, but there's a sign, a notification, church entrance or something, and you're alerting oncoming traffic that, you know, this is the turn. Because currently right now, other than the sign saying the plex, there is no advance notification indicating that there's a church entrance or something of this nature. Now, is that something that would be helpful to local traffic moving to and from? Or is that something
I did a little research on that, and what other people have found, that people are confused what that sign means. It just says church on a sign, and it's not a standard sign.
Right.
We have a manual traffic control devices we follow, and Iowa hasn't. There's only one state, Indiana, they added in a church sign. It just says church, and they felt there's a lot of confusion. Well, what's that mean?
I would, if they think they need somebody out there flagging traffic, I would sooner it be something, an arrangement they make with the sheriff's office.
Yes.
If, you know, if it's an every Sunday deal, then it's a standing over.
It becomes one of the reserves, right? I mean, isn't that what one of the reserves?
Yeah, the reserves can do it, or they could have a, you know, one of the off-duty guys sign up to do it.
Currently right now, I think there was a private contractor or someone. The cars that I first saw had
Biker Pros is
was no identification. It was not.
They should have known better. They didn't need to contact.
Yeah, and that's what I was concerned
about.
Why didn't they
stop traffic, but
go through the permitting process?
Well, I would think any private contractor, even if they have a permit, is going to open the county up to liability in the event of an accident. I mean,
yep. Well, let's get the permit first. Let's get the permit first, and then what's the normal process for a permit like that?
It would just be a work in the right of way permit, but that would give them permission to do the flagging. Is that what you're saying? You want to give them permission, or you want to use law enforcement?
I want to use law enforcement, but I think they've got to notify us formally first, don't they?
If law enforcement does it,
or are we notified?
Okay,
they'll have to just work with law enforcement. They won't involve our office.
It's different here than it is for Nevada PD and DuPont, correct? Because they are out there. They have been, you know, like 5 o'clock or something like that. How is that? Because it's a, you know,
that's a similar situation. Yeah, the city is using their police officers to stop traffic out there,
right?
Mm-hmm. In the afternoon, so it's a similar situation.
Right, but that's a tipper. When the construction process is done, then that'll be...
That'll right, that'll you know, this could be long-term.
It's going to get worse. Yeah, we're not going to have pedestrians crossing there.
Right, you're going
to
have more
and
traffic.
To me, the
there.
Pedestrian problem is the one that concerns me more than just the cars. You would think anybody driving in and out of there realizes that, hey, you know, you got to wait your turn, you know, to turn right or turn left, along that route, but the people that's crossing into the country club area, you know, is walking across there. So,
I think they probably need to get a hold of the sheriff's office and make their arrangements through them.
Okay,
and then the sheriff can figure out how he wants to handle it.
Yeah, I'm fine with that direction to Darren. If direction to Darren in this case is enough, Wayne, you okay with that direction to Darren? Just let them know that.
Yeah.
and maybe give Sheriff Fitzgerald a heads up that this is headed his way.
I think or whoever they should know about it because the calls I'm getting from the public have said they've called the sheriff's office too. But and those are the comments from the public I'm getting is one they don't want to see. Well, they don't think the flag should be out there in the first place. And two, they don't want to see speed limits reduced because they're like, it doesn't need to be at this point. And those are the comments I'm getting from the public.
Right.
So be aware of that.
Good. Thank you.
Yep. That's all I have. Thank you.
Thanks, Darren. All right. Let's see. No other reports. Liaison assignments and committee meeting updates.
No liaison assignment, but I will just mention that last night I did attend the Conservation Board meeting. It was an excellent meeting, as it usually is. There was an election of officers. Ted Tedesco is now the new chairman of the Conservation Board. They also had the oath of office of the newly appointed board member. I believe Nancy France would be her name. I think that's correct. And
is she good?
She did an excellent job already in that particular meeting. This will be coming to our attention later on. There was an amendment to the Shive Hattery for a design construction phase at Bacon's Lake expansion that was approved. You may be aware the contractor perhaps didn't do as its due diligence with subcontractors, particularly on some of the facade type of things there. There's been some work with county attorney's office and so forth in terms of a best way to approach this. We're not having to pay the full cost of that. They're going to be responsible for eating some of that cost because it was a problem that we've been able to identify, but I think based on Mike's comment with the county attorney's office, they've worked out a fair settlement and the board was comfortable with the approach that they have. And then there was a real estate contract between the Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation regarding the Pleasant Grove Community Church, which is a historic church. And they thought they had it all finalized, but then they ran into one little slight glitch, but they're trying to formalize that. And so no actual decision was made on that. It was kind of pulled until they can clear up that one issue. And I think it has a lot to do with the parking and surface and things of that nature. And then there were just a couple other things. Joe Quaker gave his RVM report, which was very well done, along with Tyler, similar to the information that we saw of the work that had been done and the updates on the drainage districts and the other clearing and some of the new equipment and some of the maintenance of the breakdown of one of the older boom things, the sprayers that they do the seeding on. So that went well. And then there was just some general update discussions. Their board, their meeting, budget meeting is tomorrow. They were hoping that one or two of the board members may be able to make it. No, Ted was not going to be able to make it. But it was an excellent discussion. And there was some discussion regarding a proposal that I've asked that they at least have conversations with Alyssa and the board just regarding some spreadsheets, comparisons of employee salaries, benefits, etc. We did spend some time talking about the flex plan and where we were at this point in time. They were very appreciative of our notifying the board and the staff, and they were very appreciative of us, of our due diligence in exploring options and so forth. So they understood the process and where we are, but they said, like a lot of employees, there is a lot of concern about the overall impact that will be. But it was a positive exchange from that standpoint. So that's about it at this point. And then there was discussion about the proposed expenditures and costs for the research park and the role that the conservation would be playing. It was just a preliminary gathering of information and ongoing communication. It seems like the it's not the DOT, the state has established an interest in the trails, and there may be some funding that could come from them as well. I saw this again would be another excellent a partnership between the city, the county, the research park, the university, especially if the state trail system would be interested in some of the future development along that line. So I suggested that you was our primary contact in this area, that it just he keeps you posted on some of the discussion and things that he's bringing forward. So.
Sure. And thank you. And Wayne, as you mentioned that, just so we're clear on that whole research park and conservation's role there, that will be a conversation that will come to us, and we will follow a very similar process to what we followed when we considered Dakin's Lake.
Yeah, right.
So a little different than we've been doing, but back to more of what's we did with Dakin's Lake.
Yeah.
Anything else on that? Anything from liaison and committee meeting updates? Announcements from the public forum number two, opportunity for members of the public to comment on items not on this agenda. We're not taking any action, but we may do so in the future. Seeing no one approaching the microphones, we'll move on to announcements from the supervisors. Wayne, anything?
I have the Boys and Girls Club Board of Directors meeting at noon today. And just wanted to remind everybody the ISAC new officer school is going on this week. Unfortunately, I won't be attending that due to budget work sessions. But that should be an excellent opportunity for newly elected officials, and I understand Stacy is going to be going to that as well. And then the ISAC Board of Directors will have its first meeting of the new year this coming Friday. I hope to maybe stop in later that afternoon if at all possible. So that's about it.
Outstanding. Thank you. Paul?
Just so you guys have kind of a heads up, we've gotten a email from an individual that represents Wheels for Wishes. A couple of different times he's emailed asking if we would be willing to put a link on our webpage. I don't know if it's a non-for-profit, but I think we need to have a discussion to see what kind of a policy we have for who's allowed to post or to put a link on our website. So I think we just need to
okay.
I'm going to suggest that I don't know that we have a policy. I know that I'm going to be really, really hesitant for anything. I'm going to suggest, she's going to love this, I'm going to suggest that you refer that to Leanne to just look into and see if we have a policy. I noticed that you looked down immediately when we started talking about it. Don't spend a lot of time on this, but we probably need to have a standard answer that we can give when somebody asks us this question, and so we need to review it. Is that all?
Yep.
So two announcements from me. One, Thursday morning, the three of us will be over at Tope Auditorium here at Nevada High School. Are you okay?
Yeah, I forgot about that.
We've got the governor and lieutenant governor coming to present us with our Connected Iowa certification. And, of course, the public is welcome and encouraged to attend that. A lot of hard work by a lot of our staff to get that done, and it's nice that we're going to be recognized by the state, and that the governor and lieutenant governor can take time out of their day to come do that with us and for us. And second, there's a floodplain training hosted by Story County and Ames Economic Development Group, and it will be 11:30 on January 28th at REG. And so we'll announce that again as we get closer to it. But those are the two announcements I had. If there's nothing else, I'd take a motion to adjourn.
So move.
Second.
Motion second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
We're adjourned.